To Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode 59, where we'll be discussing episode 23, the penultimate episode of season 3, which is called Insatiable. Karen and I are joined by our friendly team member Donya as our special guest this week. So hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
And it's our final guest host of the season before next week, where we will have the listener-voted guest host from your entries that are up online now for voting. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter or email or Tumblr, as usual, please do. Our Twitter is natwpodcast, our email is natwpodcast@gmail.com, and our Tumblr is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. So, yeah, feel free to give any feedback you'd like to. We've got some great feedback at the end of this episode from our social media followers, and we always want to hear from you and talk to you, especially if you're not anonymous, because we want to make friends with everyone. So this episode, quite a big deal, obviously. You know, quite a lot happened. Bit of drama, you know, just a bit. And, sorry.
Understatement of the year.
Yeah, I was just thinking that exactly.
But we'll go into it first, just with our favourite quotes, as per usual, which are all a bit more lighthearted than the episode ended up being, I think. Which is probably a good thing, you know, to just distract from the tragedy. But yeah, I was glad to see this week the return of proper Styles, even if he's in a brand new Styles body, because I've missed his ridiculous dynamic with Isaac, which is just one of my favourite things on the whole show. I never expected it to be this amazing, but I loved when they were trying to basically talk to Meredith, the Banshee from Icon House, in Scott's room, and they're kind of sitting off to the side having a whispered conversation, and Isaac's sort of going, I'm just saying, and Styles says, no, Isaac, we're not going to torture her. He's like, I meant scare her. We're not going to psychologically torture her either. And Isaac's just like, fine. And I just, Isaac and Styles, man, their dynamic is just, I just never would have thought that it would be this good. And it's so funny. And I just love it. And I think I've seen a few Tumblr posts around this subject going around, but I also thought of it all by myself in that, on the day that Styles and Isaac realize that they can be, like, douchebaggy partners in crime, it'll be like Scott goes away for a night from Beacon Hills and he'll come back and found out that, like, Styles and Isaac have, like, robbed a bank or started a drug cartel or, like, something, like, ridiculous, like, set something on fire, like, stolen a car or something, like, because they're just so, I don't know, bickery and both kind of much bigger jerks than Scott is, and I just, they amuse me so much. So I'm glad that we have Styles back for, you know, many reasons, but mainly so he could be funny with Isaac.
They were great scenes. I do. I love it when they're together. I really, really do. And I'm the same as you. I didn't expect that I'd enjoy it so much because I kind of have a lot of polarizing opinions about Isaac. Yeah. Like, I will sometimes really love him and think he's really on point and really funny, yeah. And he's like he almost voices sometimes my feelings if I were to be a character in the show as well, but then sometimes I'm just like, no, So it's kind of, I go from one side of the spectrum to the other. So him with Styles, I really enjoy that. So I was so glad that you picked Isaac and Styles.
And you had Isaac as well for your
career. I did have Isaac as well. Yeah, I had to pick the little quote from when they're kind of, they're all stood around and they're all like, they've all gotten together, that this big group where they can like achieve anything together, and look at the last time they all came together and they saved Malia and all that, and they're just like talking about why they're there, and Isaac's just like, I just didn't feel like doing any homework. And in an episode where we already knew that, like, I was really tense watching the whole episode because we already knew what was going to happen in this episode without actually knowing the particulars. It just, there were like little moments that kind of broke the tension for me, and that was one of them. And I really, really liked it because I was like, it felt like I could breathe again just for like a second.
Imagine if he'd been the one who died and that had been his last line.
Oh my God. Oh.
No.
Well, he wouldn't have to do homework anymore.
Oh my God. No homework anymore. Oh no. God. Anyway, another person I was genuinely worried for in this episode in terms of how much I loved him, and I thought, oh my God, they're making us love him a lot and he's going to die, was Coach. And you had one of his lines, Karen.
Yes, Coach was amazing. I have so many feelings about Coach.
I do as well.
I don't know where they came from. Like, I've always liked him, but it's just so good what they, like, did with him in such a short exchange with that head orderly.
In the last season, I think, in my opinion, I think that they've actually played him as, now that we've seen him more as a teacher rather than as the coach, if you know what I mean, because we haven't had lacrosse in this season, and so for him to be there, it's when he's actually dealing with the students as a teacher. They've actually made him out to be a really, really, really good teacher, as I've said before. Like, it's, yes, he was like a bit, you know, you had that bit where he was kind of being like, you know, un-PC about the nut house, but he wasn't being sarcastic, and everything else he was saying, except for that word, was like so nice and calm and genuine. He's so good with kids and he's so cool and I just love him. But yeah, Karen, sorry, do you want to go ahead with your actual quote?
Yeah, this is when he tasers the head orderly and he just says, this school has a very strict no bullying policy. And it was just absolutely perfect. And you kind of get the feeling that he's been wanting this revenge on whoever this random dude is from his past for like 20 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was such a good scene, like that whole exchange between all of them. And, you know, Orny Adams is a comedian, like he's a stand-up comedian. And this is his real, I think this is his very first acting job.
Oh, wow.
And Coach is extremely over the top and he's there for the comedic relief. But at the same time, they've given him this little snippet of a backstory that just makes me want to know more and kind of gives you an insight into what he's thinking and yeah, how he feels about the kids and the students. He doesn't hate them as much as he says he does. Like, that's all just a front. And I think what he's able to do really subtly with the way that he was, like, not looking the head orderly in the eyes and just his few lines and his, like, deliverance of those lines was just really actually amazing.
Yeah, I actually really, I was surprised, I mean, by even the scene where he first sort of is talking to Meredith and that whole bit where he's like, he's sort of trying to get her story out of it. Obviously you have the cute Danny bit of him being like, Coach, it's not the correct term to say insane asylum anymore. But just him, aside from that, being like sort of taking what she says seriously, like obviously he thinks that she's still a mental patient, but he's sort of not being like, oh, you know, sarcastic and weird about it. He's like, oh, that must be terrifying. Like, what's going on for you right now? And it's genuine. And I just, he knows how to handle people. And I love him. And I think there's so much depth of character there. And I want like fan fiction about his weird past with this guy who is clearly like a high school bully or something.
Yeah.
That character, that orderly, I know he has a name, what is it, Brewski or Brunski or something. He is evil. Why didn't he die? He's like, I'm still in shock that this is meant to be a real character and not meant to be like some crazy monster, if you know what I mean. That this is like, yeah. I'm still like, really? Like, they're not going to pull something out of the hat here and like have this be like someone possessed or have it be some figment of imagination? Because I'm like, I can't believe they're having this as a real, meant to be a real person that's that awful. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that even if it wasn't his childhood enemy, that Coach would have been super unimpressed with him, you know, being so gleeful about tasering a young girl. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've seen Coach and his reactions to, like his kids. So the kids on the lacrosse team are his kids. So, you know, stuff like when Isaac was in the hospital. And
yeah, he's, you're going to sign it and you're going to make a message so beautiful it'll bring a tear to Coach's eye. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. And then when Styles is missing and he's like, you know, the second you hear something, you let the nearest teacher know.
Yeah.
Like, these are his kids. And so, you know, even being able to just extend that to someone who isn't in that, almost that branch of like people he's trying to protect, because as a teacher, I guess you kind of do get very protective about the kids that you're teaching and you're looking after, because, you know, you kind of, you see them through quite a large portion of their lives.
Yeah.
So it kind of becomes almost instinct, I guess, for him to have to protect them, especially from someone who's, I mean, you can't go and taser someone. You can't. You just can't do that. I'm sorry. It's not cool. Coach can taser the orderly. That's totally cool. You can do that.
That's fine. Can we just spend the whole rest of this podcast talking about Coach?
Yeah, it's like, and then the last 5 seconds. Oh, yeah, Allison died by.
Yeah, okay. See you guys next week.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, getting into the actual discussion, before we get to, yeah, that whole big scene that I'm sure we all have lots to say about, quite a few other things happened, and the first one was that Deaton debugs Isaac, Ethan, and Aiden. He literally pulls the flies from their mouth, and the only thing that I could think of this whole time was, like, Isaac's just going to bite him, and Deaton's going to become a werewolf, and, like, what's going to happen?
He's not an alpha. He can't become a werewolf.
Oh, that's right. Oh, well, that solves that problem.
Yeah. But just wait, then he was like, Isaac, you're next, and Isaac was kind of like, oh, hell no. Kind of, he was like, no, I don't want to. What about Derek? Who pulled the bug out of Derek?
Chris?
Did he?
Chris totally did the thing.
I hope so, but I hope it's not just like, oh, Derek's still creepily possessed. Like,
don't know. Seeing as Derek went off on his need to help people thing again, I don't think he's probably possessed.
Well, it was
anymore.
So weird. When Derek left Chris's in the list in the lift, was that meant to be like an extension of the, like, I'm a burn your family scene, or was that like he just came up in the lift to say something and then was like, okay, bye, and then went back down in the lift again? Like, I don't understand. Was it meant to be him leaving after that occurrence right then?
I think so. He was wearing, well, I guess it would make sense if he was still wearing the same clothes, but yeah, I assumed that that was like them saying goodbye after everything that happened.
Yes. No hot feelings.
Oh, Chris. Oh, yeah. That Chris and Derek, Chris in general is a big part of the reason why I think that it is actually valid as a character thing that Allison died rather than the Argents just left again, because I feel like it wasn't a matter... Well, I mean, we'll get into that, but I feel like it wasn't a matter of, oh, we're just moving these people on. Like, it was one person who wanted to leave, and I think that, like, Chris has enough of his own story and connection now for him to still actually be a really solid part of the plot. So, I mean, that might have been why they've been playing up this Derek bromance now, like, that they're going to be, like, this dream team from now on. Maybe Derek will move in with him.
Which I think is really cool. Not the idea of Derek moving in with him. That's kind of weird. But, you know, the fact that, yeah, Chris does kind of have his own story now and his own things to deal with. And I think just the fact that he has this weird, random, but kind of awesome connection with Derek is something that is going to be really cool to explore going forward, just because of not only the past between the Hales and the Argents, but just in general, the past between hunters and werewolves and how all of that's going to play out, and the different things that were said between Chris and the other hunting, the leader of the other hunting group and stuff. I think it's just going to be really interesting to see how they weave his story into the main plot without Allison.
I think Derek is going to become like his child. Not like, you know, not like a little child, like, but yeah. I think it's going to become like a very pseudo father-son relationship. Like, oh, you have no family, I have no family, let's have each other, you can be my new dad. Kind of, maybe not in those words, but I think that it's going to become like a big, oh, we're so there for each other kind of thing. I've got a really strong feeling, and that would be interesting.
I think them supporting each other would be a really, really interesting thing to explore, especially considering the history that they have with each other so far.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially considering that scene from the last episode, because it was very, very clear that Chris does care for him.
Yeah.
In his own way. I think it's already, those feelings are already there. It's already got the groundwork now.
And I'm sure, I'm sure people will start shipping it as well.
Oh, they're already there. They were probably already there, like, a long time ago, to be fair.
Yeah, but they have new material. a new take on it now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a really interesting relationship to explore going forward, especially considering the outcome of this episode. Though, a side note, like, really, really briefly, are you guys aware of the Tumblr account, like, I'm Derek Hill and my family is dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, it took a grand total of maybe 20 minutes before I'm Chris Argent and my family is dead.
Oh, popped no.
Out. Oh, no.
So let's watch out for those two Tumblr accounts interacting.
Awesome. Well, he's always got Gerard, so.
I've just had a really awesome thought, and I don't think this is going to be a thing. But, like, you know how Chris was like, that's not possible about the person with the whoever's the bullets that he looked at, like, they clearly had some mark on the bottom of it. What if it's Victoria? Yeah. I don't know how it would work, because allegedly she killed herself or whatever, and he was there and stuff. But maybe she is still a werewolf, and she's like a werewolf hunter, and like she's still a hunter, but she's a werewolf, and she's like the anti-werewolf. And I don't know how this would work. But I know that they've said that they were really annoyed that they decided to kill Victoria because they actually really miss what they could do with the character. So I don't know how it would come back, but imagine if it was that.
She'd be like the Blade of werewolves.
It'd be like Catelyn Stark in Game of Thrones, like, just keeps coming back.
Yeah, no, I would love to see Victoria Argent come back. I really, really would. Like, some kind of werewolf enforcer, kind of.
Yeah, like, what if those people are her family, and, like, she kind of was, like, lying dead in the morgue, and then was like, oh, actually, I'm awake, or whatever, and, like, managed to, you know, go off and be like, hey, Mum, soz, but I'm a werewolf, what do I do now? And they, like, were like, well, we're gonna just repress your werewolf side, and you're still gonna be a hunter. I don't know. I don't know how that would work, but... And I don't know if they had a funeral for her and, like, all of that, but, yeah.
Okay, before we go down the winding path even more, let's talk about throw-up styles, which is what people are calling the real styles, and I love it.
I'm just going to call them the new styles.
I'm really glad that he's back. Like, once the Oni came and marked him, it was such a relief to finally know, like, what was real and what was not real. It was a long time coming.
Yeah. It's good that they did, you know, they did the Oni thing, but then, I mean, it was a little bit upsetting, I guess, you know, when he's lying in Scott's bed and Melissa is checking him and she's kind of, like, scared to touch him. And I don't know if that's just because she's scared of the Nagitsune or because she's scared that he's, like, this freaky brand new person, but that kind of made me sad. She was scared to touch him.
Well, after what the other one said to her and how it tricked her so much, that didn't really surprise me, but it was sad just to see her, like, reach for him and then pull back. And he was like, you could see Styles was just so, he felt so guilty about it. And he was like trying to say sorry with his eyes. And he knew that like nothing was ever going to be enough.
Oh, yeah. Feelings.
Oh. But he's like a brand new person, but he's the real Styles. Like we've just,
it's so weird. I have no idea how that works.
Yeah, me either.
I wonder if we're going to get any of those, like, Buffy-style Dawn, like, technically, I'm only 2 years old kind of jokes in the next season or something like that.
That would be kind of funny. So, let's talk about probably my favorite scene from this episode, which is so dumb because it was, like, 2 seconds long. But I'm really, really excited about this for no other reason than it's just about Deputy Parrish because he says that he was drawn to Beacon Hills. He left his previous job and decided to come to Beacon Hills because something drew him there. So is this confirmation that he's supernatural?
Yes. I was a bit
That's what I took from it as well.
I was like, a bit weirded out that the sheriff, like, was like, sort of suddenly got all sus. Like, you're a good guy, Parrish. That's what they said at your old job. They didn't say why you left or anything. Like, they were kind of, like, he started getting a bit, like, to me, the sheriff sounded, like, slightly suspicious. I don't know, but but yeah, Parrish, I think that there is definitely something.
What do you think he could be, though? Do you think he's something new, or do you think he could maybe be, like, a werewolf?
Son of Peter.
Oh, God.
I think Camden Leahy.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he said he was in the army, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's, like, Camden, wasn't it, like, said that Camden was, like, killed in action in the army?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But he was a little bit older, I think. Like, the other people were all a little bit, how old was
he? No, I think someone worked out how old Camden would have been.
Like, those other people who were in his class, like, how, yeah.
So he would have been 24, which Parrish made a point of saying on the bus.
Okay, literally just typed into my phone, like, Camden Leahy, in terms of, like, I just put it in my Google search, and I've never searched him before, and literally the third hit in terms of, like, auto-filling, it was, like, Camden Leahy, Teen Wolf, Camden Leahy, Deputy Parrish. So this is clearly a thing people think.
Yeah, I don't know, it kind of makes sense.
But would he be supernatural already? Isaac wasn't when he became a werewolf. Like, why would that mean he was drawn there? Unless he was, like, just saying it because he, you know, he knew Isaac was there and he wanted to.
Yeah, but I don't know. He could be a different kind of shapeshifter. We don't know what they're going to move into in the next season yet, do we? Like, they tend to tackle different mythologies of, like, different kinds of shapeshifters. So
yeah, from what I've heard, I think we're going to move into, like, South American stuff, but there's no guarantee if that's going to be, like, the whole season or if that's just something they're doing in a couple of episodes or even if that's the case at all. But I mean, obviously, we're just guessing here because we really have no evidence whatsoever that he is something supernatural other than saying specifically, I was drawn here, which seems kind of ominous and related to the Nemeton, but I would love to see him be something other than, like, something new, something we haven't seen before, just because I'm always interested in finding out what else exists in the Teen Wolf world.
Yeah.
Why would Camden, if it is Camden, Jesus, you've given me a whole thing to think about. Why would he go off and, like, pretend to be killed in action and, like, come back, like, and has he seen Isaac? Has Isaac seen him? And maybe, like, maybe it's, like, Camden Leahy's brain, like, or consciousness, like, in, like, a different body, like, some sort of shapeshifter, like, surely people would know it was him. I don't know. I'm anxious now. Thanks a lot. Like,
that's okay. You're welcome. I don't know. I kind of think in a way it's not that he was pretending to be, like, killed in action or missing in action. I think it's more like he did actually go missing, whether he was taken by something or something happened to him. He did go missing and was presumed dead. Because you're presumed dead after, or you're declared dead after a certain amount of time, right?
And what, did he, like, forget who he was? Or, like, how did he come back and get into the army? Like, into the police force, like, without any, like, anyway, I don't know. Far out, Sonia.
Oh, okay. I just keep thinking about Isaac and how much he could use an older brother and how amazing that would be to have... He does, but I think Scott and him are on more equal footing than he would be with somebody like Camden. And to just have an actual family member back, like, imagine how much that would mean to Isaac.
I suppose. And imagine, like, Parrish. I was about to say Camden. Donya, you're killing me. Parrish is such, like, an automatic good guy, and Isaac is such a douche. And can you imagine him being like, Isaac, you must be nicer to people and stuff. Like,
yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, I have a feeling that is kind of what Camden was like. I don't know if that's anything that we know about, but I've always kind of imagined him as being...
a golden boy.
Like the upright older son. I don't know. Anyway... just going off on a lot of tangents tonight. But Styles shows up, and we get the Styles and Sheriff reunion, and I cried during this because of Lyndon Ashby, and, you know, Sheriff still just basically throwing his chair out of the way and running over to Styles, and it was so gratifying to see the relief on his face and just to kind of, like, finally get them to hug each other and know that it truly is really Styles.
Yeah, it was nice, like, the little nod that Scott gave, being like, yep, this is the real one, we're all good. And it's just weird to think that he's, like, had, you know, been seeing Styles the whole time. I mean, then he gets Nay Styles, but, like, that he's just hasn't been with his child.
Every scene with Styles and the Sheriff just gets me. It's like a gut punch every single time. It's just, it's so good. It's such a good relationship on the show, and it's one of my favorite ones that they do. But linking it forward to, like, the scene a little bit, like, further into the episode where Styles is in a lot of pain, and it's kind of revealed that he's in... Do you think he was in pain in this scene and he just grit his teeth and let his dad hug him as hard as he possibly could just because he knew that would make him feel better?
I don't know. I mean, he did seem to progressively get worse, but possibly. Yeah. I wouldn't not believe it. Like.
Yeah. I was just like, oh. Like, thinking and looking back and just thinking, oh, no. I don't know if that make it worse or if that, like, makes me feel more things.
I think that makes sense, though. I mean, Styles, there's no way Styles would be like, okay, Dad, we're done. You know, not after everything that his dad's been through. So,
no, that's
interesting.
Yeah.
So, in this same scene, we get the reveal that Meredith is, in fact, a Banshee, which I think was a pretty strong opinion among a lot of people before this happened. So were you guys surprised by this, or did you sort of see it coming?
I wasn't surprised. I think that it was a pretty clear indicator, and I don't know if they'd confirmed it. I mean, they said that we were going to see another Banshee. I don't know where that information came from specifically, but it just made a lot of sense. It wasn't a huge reveal for me.
Yeah, the same. I wasn't particularly surprised, especially after the scene at Icon House where she's on the phone, because didn't we also get a scene where, like, the phones weren't connected?
Yeah. So,
you know, it kind of, it was basically putting that together. It couldn't have been anything else. I mean, she had to have been hearing something. And the only other kind of thing that we've had with being able to hear voices is with Lydia being a Banshee. So I kind of, like, figured that was probably what they were hinting at with that scene.
Something that comes up with her later in the sort of Banshee powers was interesting. And again, I don't remember if this is just meta or if it was something that was being talked about in an interview or whatever, but it did also seem to confirm, like, we don't really know how the Banshee powers work. but this did kind of seem to confirm that banshees kind of hear other banshees rather than dead people. I don't know how this works, but, you know, the way Meredith said, like, if she, you know, if she tells me, like, it seems like the voices that they hear are of other banshees, maybe of ones of the past or even whatever, that it's not sheerly dead people's voices or whatever, that it's actually all the banshees of the world are all connected and basically screaming in each other's ears constantly. So that must be...
Yeah. That actually, all of that information about the banshees that we learned ahead of time came from Jeff on Wolf Watch. So he definitely did say that it was other banshees, which was really interesting to me. I had assumed that it was like the dead people too, although later on when Lydia is down in the tunnels, I kind of got the sense that maybe it was those people that she was hearing. So maybe they can hear both, but the banshees talking to each other in that way is definitely a thing.
Yeah, it's handy, I guess.
Yeah. So moving on, we get a scene where Ethan and Aiden are being shot at. They're running through the woods looking for Lydia, and somebody just starts to open fire on them using Wolfsbane bullets. And the first thing that really jumped out at me was that Derek is the one that saves them. I think this is so interesting considering how much he just does not trust them, and he's kind of got this, like, superiority thing about them, which I don't think we can blame him for, because he is willing to fight and die for Scott. And the twins, I think, have proven in the past that they just want to survive. So him being willing to do that, I think, shows a lot of character on Derek's part.
I mean, why were they running through the woods and getting shot at? Were they looking for Stiles or Lydia?
They were looking for Lydia.
They were tracking,
yeah.
But I was like, "What? Why are they running? Like, is this just how they track things? Like, while running, not like while carefully sniffing." I don't know. Like, you imagine search dogs, and they're not like running while, like, you know, they're kind of like on different trees. Yeah. Sorry, that was
the running.
That's right, and sniffing.
The running thing, the thing that got me is that if the Nogitsune had gone through the woods with Lydia and had, like, been taking her through that way, if they were running, they'd have probably just, like, kicked up all of her tracks and their tracks and covered over a load of stuff. Like, they wouldn't have been, like, paying that much attention, because there's more than just smell. Like, they have other senses that are heightened as well, and for a couple of people who were former alphas, that's kind of a little bit short-sighted of them to rely on just one sense.
They just looked like they were running from something. They literally just looked like they were running away. I didn't realize that they were meant to be tracking her until they kind of said it. It was weird.
So speaking of them getting shot at, though, yeah. I mean, we learn a little bit later on that, well, Chris looks at the bullets, and it's like a shotgun shell that he finds, and he says... Now, I think he says it wasn't Mariah, and we're assuming that's the leader of the South American Hunters, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. Derek seems to be familiar as well. Like, oh, it doesn't look like her shells. Yeah. And, yeah, the woman that we thought might either be his mother or Victoria's mother, you know, whoever she is, that lady. And then he kind of says, yeah, that's not possible. And he kind of looks at it and note that this is after, like, a while after we've seen the scene with Allison and Chris making bullets or whatever, like, with the crest on them. Like, so we're assuming that this has got someone else's signature on it, if you know what I mean, that's what he's identifying, mm-hmm. because we've seen that they apparently do that with their special bullets or whatever. So someone's shooting at them, and that's not possible. So who do we think?
Gosh, I don't know. What if it has, like, his crest on it? Does he have another sister?
Oh, no. She crazy, too? So, yeah, I mean...
Save Derek.
Kate or Victoria or Gerard? Maybe Gerard's all healed and is out there shooting at werewolves. Mm-hmm. Just hanging out in the woods shooting werewolves, like...
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I don't think that this is the case. But when he picked up that shell and we really got a good look at it, my first thought was of Kate, just because, like, we've seen her use weapons like that before. Not that other hunters wouldn't use weapons like that, but that was where my mind went first. So I don't know if we're really meant to know who it's going to be, that maybe this is just going to be one of those things that is going to lead us into the next season, and we'll find out then what exactly is going on.
Maybe it was Malia. Maybe it was Mr. Tate.
Mm.
Maybe they're secret werewolf hunters now. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Isaac and Allison find Lydia's car in the next scene. And while this is sort of significant because Lydia leaves a message to not find her. The big scene here is between the two of them, because they talk about the fact that they did have sex that night before. Well, I guess Isaac was kind of crazy.
Was I getting the timing on this right? It was after he swallowed the fly or it went in his ear or whatever, right?
Like, yeah.
Because when he met the hospital and then he came over and he was there and then they had sex and then he left her handcuffed to the bed.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so did he lie, or was it like he thought it was him?
No, because Stiles remembers everything that he did, so I think Isaac was there, and, I mean, he wasn't necessarily himself, but he does remember everything. I don't think that was a lie.
This is such a difficult thing to, like, kind of, like, toe the line of, but, you know, did he just say it to make her feel better?
Well, I don't know, because Danny and Ethan as well had the same thing, and it was almost like the fly thing gets worse, if you know what I mean. Like, at first, you know, when the fly infects Derek at, you know, when Peter's there, when they're talking about the chest, he doesn't instantly start throwing gasoline around, you know. Like, I feel like it might make them, as we kind of said, those flies seem to make, it's not like they're possessed, but it seems to make people act on their very intense private feelings, if you know what I mean. And so it's like, you know, on another day, Ethan and Danny might not be like, let's have sex in the showers at school. That's probably not a good idea. But on this day, Ethan wanted to, so they did, if you know what I mean. Like, and it doesn't mean that it was like, there's no point of something possessing, you know, Ethan, just to have sex with Danny. It's more, I think, that they were just more acting on their impulses that they would have before. Like, it is still themselves.
So heightened emotions and
so it was Isaac. But I was trying to work out if they were talking about the night when he'd already been possessed by the fly, because she said the night before, the night you weren't you. And it's like, well, he was in the hospital and the fly possessed him, so it was always, I got really confused, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, in the morning, he decided that he was really crazy and was going to handcuff her to the bed. But yeah, I was a bit confused by that. I'm not gonna lie. So I don't know if it was like just to make her feel better, but you know, he feels like it was him, I suppose. Like, but I think he felt like all of what he was doing was him. It was just it wasn't like, I know that I'm possessed. It was his own heightened emotions, stuff that he wouldn't usually act on.
Yeah, I agree with that. The next scene is when Meredith shows up in Coach's class, and we did already talk about this quite a bit and how awesome Coach is, but apparently the other girls have some things to say about healthcare.
Yeah, sorry. Number one, can I just say, who was it that said that they were going to love it if Coach went around the whole time, you know, from now on, going on about, like, his arrow wound and showing it to people?
Yeah, that was me.
The opening bit where he was saying that on the, like, on the phone, like, I got shot with an arrow, I thought he was maybe trying to get, like, health insurance in the way that it ended up being, like, that he was trying to get, like, a lawsuit, or, like, that he was making a big deal of his wound or whatever, and I was like, oh, it's happening! But it wasn't quite that. It was actually that he was getting his medical bills, and he turns around and is like, fine, just send me the bill of $10,000.
$10,000!
And he turns around and he's like, right, so this week, today we're going to discuss the corrupt institution of healthcare. And I was just like, look, here's the thing, if you are not from the US, anyone who's in the USA, anyone who is in another country that's not in the USA, there's very few places that are as bad as you guys in terms of healthcare that are, you know, to be considered actual developed countries with, you know, resources accessible. Your healthcare system literally to the rest of the world looks barbaric and insane. Like it's scary. Like it's just not something anyone from anywhere else that I've ever met can process. Like I just don't understand what, and the arguments people make about it. Like the arguments that like people make against having government funded healthcare or like why they want private health insurance. It just doesn't make sense. I don't understand. Like. I just don't get it, like, at all. If you
don't ask me to explain it.
If something happens to you in Australia and you are a citizen of Australia, you go to the hospital and they fix it for free. Like, unless there's, like, some big... Like, I think sometimes, like, there's an ambulance fee if you have an ambulance and it's not, like, a super emergency. And, like, there are places you can go to the doctor for free. If you want to see a doctor that's a bit more like exclusive, you can pay. Like there are people who are like a private doctor and you can pay to see them. But there are clinics that basically they just charge Medicare. They just charge the government fee, which is paid for by the government. And yeah, I mean, you have to pay for medication, but it's not as expensive, not even as close as expensive as it is in America. And I have private health insurance, which is basically for quote-unquote extras, which is, like, for dental and optical and, like, physiotherapy and stuff. And that's, like, $10 a week or something, and that covers me for extra things because I wear glasses and I have teeth and stuff. So that's not free. If you want to go pay a dentist, there's no Medicare on that. You just have to either have private or you just pay their full fee. But for actual medical treatment, if I got shot in the stomach with an arrow and I went to hospital and they fixed it, it would cost me $0. Like, that is how much.
It's the same here as well. Like, the second he said $10,000, I think I almost just choked on air. I was like, no, that's a little bit excessive, right?
And I don't think it is excessive. That's the thing. I've seen people put their medical bills online, and it's like the amount it costs to stay per night in a hospital. I've seen people come out of, like, oh, I had a car crash or something. Yeah, my medical bills for, like, getting, like, my leg reset and surgery and being in the hospital for 10 nights, $100,000 or something. I'm like, I don't understand how people live like that. Like, and I hear people, I'm dying, like, literally people who die because they don't have healthcare. And I'm like, how is that a thing? And it's because they literally don't have $100,000 to pay for it. Like, I don't, how's your country survived? Like, it's barbaric. It's insane. I'm blaming you, Karen, specifically.
I feel like I should defend my country, but I honestly have nothing to say.
I just don't understand how it's gone down that path. Like, I don't understand where in history someone was like, we're not going to dedicate government money to that, and that it's become the norm, like, for you guys not to have that, and that it's become the norm for other countries to have that, and all of the objections people make to having health care, if you know what I mean. Like,
it's a pretty even split in the UK. Like, you know, we've got the NHS, we've got the National Health Service, which is completely free. You get everything, and that's absolutely everything for free through them. So if you need healthcare, you can see someone. I mean, sure, in terms of like the smaller surgeries for stuff like just smaller things, non-emergencies, it sometimes gets a little bit difficult to get an appointment at,
like,
those, because
or like it might, it's very basic, like, as in they're all very overworked and they, you know, might not spend as much treating you like as a special snowflake like a private place might.
Yeah. But we also have private healthcare here as well, and you can opt to do that, and you get through wait lists quicker, you get through stuff quicker because you are paying for the service. So, you know, it's a pretty even split. Like, in my particular group of friends, I think half of us only ever use the NHS, and the other half are actually on private healthcare because they opted in, they pay for it.
I just can't handle the idea that people seem to have in America. Not everyone, but like that these people seem to have that it's like people really have this attitude of, oh, well, why should I pay tax for other people to have healthcare? Like, if you know what I mean, like it's that attitude of like, well, they didn't earn my money is. If anyone ever said that here, people would just be like, what the hell are you talking about? Because like, it's like, that's how tax works. It's like, so you can also have it, just consider it paying your own fees if you have to think about it like that. But that people are so against the idea of welfare, like that they think it's like some socialist stuff and that like the people are so proud of being so selfish. Like, oh, and that they take that as a point of defense. That would never, ever happen here. Like, I cannot process the attitude. I think we should probably move on from this, but I just don't get it. And, like, some of the arguments I've seen, like, for people, it's insane to me that, like, is this the, like, American way that, like, you know, basically that they're so against, like, helping the masses and like anyone else's problem is anyone else's problem. I guarantee you no one sits around here thinking, oh, my taxes are going to help other people. Like people don't really think about that way as far as I know here.
I have normal. No answers for you guys. Sorry.
Sorry.
But
yeah. Anyway, yeah. Sorry about your healthcare.
Thank you. So I guess this sort of fits in with what we were just talking about because Styles may need to invest in some healthcare plans because he is in a lot of pain and he's freezing cold. And I feel really strongly that this is somehow related to Malia because she was freezing cold. And granted, they gave us an excuse for that, but I'm not totally convinced that that's exactly why she was so cold all of the time. So what do you guys think?
I don't know. I didn't really think about it in conjunction to Malia. I feel like that Malia story can't be just as simple as, oh, she's Peter's child, the end. Like, I feel like we've overblown that too much. So I don't know.
I'm not sure either. I mean, it's kind of really, really strange that they've only used Malia twice, right? If you think about it. Like, in the Icon House storyline and then just in episode 2. And that feels really strange to me that they've given her so much emphasis. Like, I'm still so unsure whether sex actually happened between her and Styles. Like, I'm still on the fence of whether I know whether that happened or not. Like, not in terms of, like, was the whole Icon House thing real or not, but in terms of, like, that scene was framed really weirdly for me, and it still confuses me. Like, I'm still not sure if we're supposed to believe whether they went the whole 9 yards or not.
Now she's pregnant with the Nagitsune's child. Like,
oh, God.
But, you know, it kind of feels really, really strange that, so what, that's it? We're not going to follow up on that. There isn't something else that's relating to it. I mean,
there is. Because we were told that she was playing this super secret role, top secret role, and I feel like Malia so far hasn't really been top secret worthy. I mean, maybe the fact that she's Peter's child is, but that doesn't seem that significant to me. I feel like you're right, there's got to be more to her story, and I'm hoping we get that in the next episode.
I'm hoping we get something at least to lead us into season 4, to give us something that kind of links kind of what happened at the start of the season with what happened with Styles to now. I mean, I want something to like lead us into season 4 so we find out more about her. She kind of fascinates me in a way that I want to know more. I want to know so much more about her, whether she turns out to be Peter's child or not. Like, I'm not so sure that I actually believe that she is.
Yeah, I'm still kind of iffy on that too.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, yeah, I don't know, they kind of, she was the only option, I guess, for like Lydia and Allison, like, from what they know, for the basis of what they know and other supernatural creatures that they know, Malia was probably their only option. Because they don't know any other shapeshifters, right? But I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced that Malia is actually Peter's child.
I don't
especially
think so
since
either.
We don't necessarily know how Lydia knows that. Like, she told Peter she didn't know. That doesn't mean she doesn't know, or if she does know, you know, it's still like everything's up in the air and there are these dots and they're just not connected yet. So that's why I'm hoping we get more information in the next episode, because we really need to fill in the blanks for quite a bit of things.
Yeah, I still think about Malia that, I mean, as I said before, I was very confused by the situation in that, you know, she tells Peter she doesn't know, either because she doesn't want to help him or she wants to protect the person or something. But then when she says to Allison, like Malia Tate or whatever in the car, you know, is it just that she assumed or is it that she knows something and is lying about it, or does she genuinely think it is Malia because she's taken the clues wrong? Or I don't know. It's very... This baby story cannot be this simple. I just don't believe it.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, talking about filling in the blanks, to kind of jump ahead for a second, we have Allison and she graduates and she can make her silver bullet now, but she chooses to make a silver arrowhead. But the thing that really stuck out to me in this scene is she holds up the arrowhead and she holds up the bullet and yeah. She says, there must be something that I'm missing. And before she can really think about it or vocalize anything else, she gets the phone call that Lydia has been found. This feels so significant to me.
I thought this as well. I was like, she was like, what am I missing? I'm like, what? I got really confused by that too. Like, what that even was meant to mean. Like, it's like the arrow was unfinished or something. Is it like a metaphor
right.
that she like dies unfinished? Because they had enough metaphors in this episode. Like, they had that arrow, like one of the arrows like breaking and hitting the ground and Lydia kind of screaming at that or hearing that like later on. So I don't know, I was really confused by that too. Like, maybe she's just being a perfectionist, maybe it's like that Chris's was all polished and hers wasn't polished. Like,
yeah, I don't know. It does still feel like we're missing something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that I think we've probably, this is the thing, I think we've already got all of the pieces for the puzzle. We just haven't figured out how to put it together yet. And that we've probably got just one piece that's missing and suddenly that'll just make everything fall into place. But I right. can't figure out what it is, and it's bugging me.
Yeah. I have a feeling, though, that it must have something to do with Allison, because I know that she died in this episode, and I feel that she really is dead. I mean, who knows what's going to happen from here on out, but I think that this is the big death that everyone has been talking about, the one that's going to stick. But the thing is, I mean, to tie this in with the next scene, Voidstyles talks about there being a trickster, and he mentions the coyote, he mentions the kitsune, he mentions a raven, and a lot of people, because we got this in the promo after the last episode, were wondering, okay, is Allison the raven? Like, is she a trickster? And I kind of wonder if something else is going on there, and maybe Allison isn't really dead, but is, like, she has to die again or something. I don't know. I have so
yeah.
many theories running through my head I have no idea what's going on.
All season, we've been saying, something's wrong with Allison, she's evil, I'm going to feel really bad if it just gets to the end of the season and this is it. Like, that I haven't been taking her, like, pain seriously or whatever. Like, the whole scene with Sheriff Stilinski, with the hug and all of that, like, again, I thought there was something weird and manipulative about it, and I'm like, is that just me being awful, because is that meant to be genuine and I'm not taking it as genuine? So I don't know what's going on. And
yeah, well, here's the thing, because, and we're going to talk about this more at the end of the episode, but I really do have a lot of faith in the writing on this show. I think it's amazing, and right now so many things have been pointing towards Allison being a little bit shady. I mean, there are a lot of unanswered questions, and it worries me that we have one episode left and we still have all of these unanswered questions. And it just makes me think that hopefully everything's going to come together in the end. And Danya, like you were saying, we're going to get that final puzzle piece and everything will finally make sense. But if that doesn't happen, I really want to know how they can, how they're going to explain away the things that Allison has been doing or not doing, you know, like the phone call. We never got any more answers about why she received that phone call, why her phone was off to begin with, just various other very little and subtle things that I think have been jumping out to us all season. If they don't get answers, it's just going to be so disappointing and confusing, and I'm not really going to know what to think about that.
I think it felt like, for me, that it was, I don't know, there was something about Allison's storyline this season that kind of started off kind of, and even the little threads we've had with her that felt like it was leading up to something more than just what we got in this episode, which was her dying. I get the feeling that, or I personally felt that there was something more to it than what we've currently got. And whether we'll get that in the next episode or not remains to be seen. But I really, really hope we do get something else, something related to Allison in the next episode that brings it back.
Do you think she'll be in the next episode, like that Crystal has filmed anything for the next episode?
I think it's a possibility. I think
it's a definite possibility.
I mean, even if it's just like a memory or some sort of flashback thing, or even, I don't want to say like a hallucination, or just thinking about her and it sort of being like a dream kind of thing would make a lot of sense to me. But I don't know if it could be anything more significant than that at this point.
What if the Nogitsune goes into her dead body?
Oh.
Happy.
See, that's sort of what I've been afraid of, that, like, there's going to be this whole trick where Allison comes back to life, or maybe she wasn't dead to begin with, and she has to die again. Like, can you imagine watching Allison die a second time?
No.
That I would cried destroy enough this time everybody.
I genuinely cried enough this time around. I don't think I could, I can't handle seeing her die again. I think that would actually break me. I mean, it's entirely plausible that that could happen, but because going back, what was it, the other scene with Styles and Isaac, where Isaac is saying, you know, well, you're getting weaker and sicker, you're in more and more pain.
Like, I'm going to be the one to say, is you that... look like you're dying. Like,
yeah.
Thanks, you know, Isaac.
Yeah. Isaac telling it like it is.
I love him. Oh, I can't believe how much I like him.
But this is the thing, is that he's saying that, but what happens if Styles gets weak enough that is that what's sustaining the Nogitsune in the other Styles' body?
I don't know. Because he said, oh, if you're getting sicker, does he look like he's getting better? Surely, like, that follows on to, like, if he's killed, you'll get all your strength back. But then it's like, oh, if you're killed, will he die? You know, if he's killed, will you die too? Like, that doesn't seem to follow on if he's taking strength from Styles, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I assume one of them's going to die, then it gets an A Styles or the real Styles.
Hopefully
one way or another, we're going to see Styles' face probably die.
Aww.
Whether it's actual Styles or voice Styles.
I mean, that being said, those scenes with the Nagitsune and Lydia in the tunnels and, you know, where she was, and just the way that he talked to her and the way he got up, I was literally being like, I don't even recognize you as, now that they're separate, like now that we have Styles acting as Styles and the Void acting as the Void, I don't even like see them as the same. Like they don't even look the same. Like I don't I don't know. I just literally completely took them as different characters, which hopefully is the point. But yeah.
Good acting, man. When you can have the same actor do those two things pretty much back to back and it's just that well done that they feel so different.
Imagine it's how freaked out you would be, like, on the cast, like, having Dylan, like, turn that on, like...
Oh, man.
Oh, my crazy. God. And I kind of want to do that if I ever meet him. Be like, can you do voice styles? But then I'd be really upset. I don't know.
In the next scene, we get Coach saving Meredith, which we've talked about before. But what I wanted to say here was that Meredith is, like we said, the Banshee. And on Wolf Watch, they did say that Meredith is going to be heading into season 4. So I'm actually really excited about that because we know season 4 is going to be a bit more of Lydia's season. And hopefully she's really going to start understanding her powers. And I have a feeling that while Meredith has had her powers for a little bit longer, I don't think she necessarily knows exactly how they work either. She's got a little bit better of a handle on them than Lydia does. But I would really like to see these two kind of team up and try to figure things out together. Can you imagine how hilarious that would be? I really like Meredith. I think she's hilarious.
Her and Lydia is like... Because she doesn't seem to realize she's a banshee. It's not like she's like Lydia and other people are just thinking she's crazy. She clearly doesn't know what's going on, but just goes with it. And yeah, I would like to see them as a team. That would be hilarious.
I think it would be really interesting. I think that would be so interesting to see. Just because I really did like Meredith. Yeah, I loved her line about Isaac being her dad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic. The whole, she's my girlfriend, and her being like, you're not my type, and Stiles is like, yeah, obviously we have a lot to talk about.
It was so nice seeing funny Stiles back. Like, even though, like I said before, even when he was in Icon House, like, it's very muted. It's not the Stiles that we knew in season 1 or even season 2, but even just that little bit of humor after these past few episodes is really, really nice to see.
Yeah, it's good to see that he is himself and not too traumatized. I mean, I'm sure there's some trauma in there, but, you know.
He's trying to cope with it.
Yeah. I think he probably hasn't had enough time to process it yet. I mean, it's not. Like, everything isn't over, so I don't think he's had enough time to stop and really think about everything that's happened. I mean, clearly it is affecting him, especially, like, that little car trip bit where they're all in the car together. I mean, you kind of get the feeling that it's there, it's lingering in the back of his head, but it's not the pressing issue for now for him to be all post-traumatic stress disorder kind of thing. It's kind of, they need to get on, they need to stop the Nogitsune before he does any more damage.
Yeah, things just haven't slowed down enough for him to, I think, really take into account everything that he did. And they have this pressing matter of trying to stop everybody that he literally cannot stop to just figure out what's going on and how this is going to be, like, going forward. And I think that's kind of sad, you know? I mean, everything that he's been through to kind of just have to keep trucking on and not be able to rest. But I wouldn't imagine in a million years Stiles would just be like, okay, I'm going to sit this one out, you know? So yeah. I think it does make a lot of sense, even if it is unfortunate for him. Now, the next scene was kind of a big one. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of people, us included, I'm pretty sure, thought it was a bit anticlimactic. So basically, Agent McCall finally spills his big secret. And I definitely want to say that this is a big deal. I mean, it is important to note that Agent McCall was an alcoholic and he did accidentally hurt Scott. Scott fell down the stairs and hit his head, and that's why he left. Melissa kicked him out, and Agent McCall stopped drinking after that, and he left, and he hasn't been back since. So I definitely don't want to, like, belittle that situation, because I think that is a big deal, and it is really sad, and those sort of things do really happen. But at the same time, it wasn't really what I was thinking it was going to be.
No, and I mean, I'm really confused by this entire situation because Yeah, as I said, it's not like it's not a big deal. But I don't understand pretty much anything about what happened. Like, Scott's reaction, like, we had him sort of be like, hey, this isn't a big deal. Like, kind of, not like, oh, I forgive you, but, like, that's why you, like, didn't come back, if you know what I mean? Like, stuff happens and you get over it. So if you didn't show up before now because of that. That was just, Scott's reaction to me was quite weird. Like, I understand that he didn't care, but it was quite weird. And the whole thing that, like, Melissa was meant to feel guilty about, is it like you think that Scott will hate you because you told his dad to leave as opposed to his dad just leaving, if you know what I mean? Like, and then yeah. Is McCall, like, Scott's making McCall feel bad for never coming back when it was actually Melissa that told him not to, but I don't really, we don't know if that's the case. Like, we don't know if it's, like, Melissa told him never come back or if it's just, like, McCall was too ashamed or whatever. Like, this is just, and nothing about this really makes sense. I don't know. It was strange.
I think the way that I looked at it was Nagitsune Styles, Void Styles, I guess kind of preyed on the kind of the victim blaming kind of thing that we get. That, you know, you can stay in these abusive kind of relationships and you try and hold it together. You try and keep it together for your family. And because you think, you know, she clearly was probably still in love with him. And, you know, that was her husband. That was the father of her son. And, you know, she probably was trying to, like, keep it together. And to kind of eventually just tell him, no, enough is enough, and get out. You know, for me, that's a really, really strong thing to be able to do, to be able to just say, no, you know what? That's it.
Yeah.
Get out. That is such a strong, amazing, brave thing for Melissa to have done. But, you know, I think the Nagitsune kind of was trying to play on the fact that, you know, victim blaming is a huge thing in this sort of instance. You know, that kind of, I don't know how to verbalize this in the right way. But
yeah, I mean, my impression was that it was trying to make her believe that Scott would be angry. You know, he thought his father was, you know, a douche who left of his own accord, I guess, and just, you know, buggered off, and didn't realize it was like that Melissa told him to leave. And then, you know, he thought that she would, Nagitsune tried to make her think that Scott would hate her for, I guess, keeping that, like, every time Scott was like, ah, dad's such a dick for leaving, you know, her not saying, actually, it was me because he hurt you or whatever. Like, I just don't get, like, how are we meant to think Scott would react? Like, I don't think that that's a thing. Like, it's a really weird thing to...
Two things here. I think, one, it's important to note that the Nagitsune feeds off of chaos and strife and pain. And by saying that, even if it wasn't true, but by kind of putting that thought into Melissa's head, he's feeding off of her feelings. I mean, we know that that's what he does. So I think for that, it does make sense, even if it isn't necessarily the truth. And the second thing is that Scott's reaction, I kind of had to think about this for a little while because I was a little confused by it too, because it did seem like he was sort of accepting of it at first. I was like, wait, what's going on? And I think the thing is that it's not necessarily unforgivable for him that McCall was a drunk and that he did that thing. Maybe it was an accident. I mean, that's totally possible. I mean, it seemed like it was because it shocked him quite a bit to completely stop drinking. And not to say that it's not a bad thing, but I think that's something that can be forgiven with time and with effort put forward on McCall's part. However, the fact that he's been gone for, I mean, years and years and years, and probably hasn't really had any contact, that is unforgivable to Scott. And I can understand why he is so pissed off at him, because he hasn't been a father for a very long time. And for him to just kind of come back and think that telling his dirty little secret is going to make everything okay, it won't, because that's not the terrible thing that he did in Scott's mind.
If McCall really regretted what he did, if he really felt remorse for it, if he really wanted to reconnect with his son, he would have cleaned up his act and he would have made the effort to reconnect with his family sooner. Whether that would have been through making sure, I guess not coming home. I don't necessarily mean putting himself back into their lives directly, but at least having some kind of contact with Scott. You know, trying to, like, call him, find out how he is, what's happening with school. Even, I don't know, offering for Scott to come and visit him for, like, a weekend or something, or during a break, or that kind of thing. If he had, I don't know, if he'd felt genuine remorse, if he had wanted to kind of extend that olive branch, it should have come a hell of a lot sooner than it actually did.
And I mean, I think that's what Scott's angry about, that, you know, it's like, I don't care that this happened, I care that you didn't face up to it, you know, before.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. Like, you know, I don't think it's a matter of Agent McCall not caring enough, but he was clearly driven by shame, and that overtook. I mean, not that I really feel sorry for him, because this whole plotline was really stupid, but sorry, but it was. It was like, we've been wasting so much time on this. I want a secret family, goddammit. I don't actually, but
I think that would have been a lot more interesting.
Yeah, but like, I'm like, this is just, and I mean, I guess some of it is kind of like, you know, some of it might be that, like, we're meant to be, like, looking at, like, how, like, I literally wrote down, is this plotline just to show how much of a blustering idiot Agent McCall is, in terms of, like, oh, he thinks that his problems are the biggest problems in the world, and he has no idea, like, what else everyone else is dealing with, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, and see, the thing is, with him not coming back sooner, I feel like I can understand that, because, like you said, in his mind, like, this is such a big deal. And I think that's why it was kind of awkward with Scott's reaction, because we had built it up so much, because we saw everything that everybody was saying about it and was thinking, oh, it's this huge thing. And then it turns out to not be. And I think Scott's reaction was more on point than anything else.
Really? Like, really? I really don't have time for this right now.
Like seriously, my best friend is possessed by a Negitsune. I don't have time for your crap right now.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly it. In the grand scheme of kind of things that are going on in the show, that's not the most pressing issue.
No.
Here's what I want to think about. He came home. Scott and Stiles and Meredith came back into the house, and they had that whole, like, Stiles took Meredith and Isaac upstairs to, you know, torture Meredith or whatever it was that they were doing. Isaac was already in the house with Agent McCall before Scott got home. Can you imagine that conversation?
Oh man, not really.
Yeah, it'd just be a lot.
Like,
of
so you live
of,
here
like,
now. Why is that? Like,
it's like my family is all dead. Yeah. Thanks for asking. Someone missing out on that Tumblr account. Where's I am Isaac Leahy and my family's dead? Where's that Tumblr account?
Oh God, I'm sure it's out there. It's gotta be. Speaking of this, like, internal conflict between families, though, we have Kira sort of facing off with her mom, which I really kind of liked. I like this idea that even though Mrs. Yukimura has a lot more experience and she obviously knows what's going on, Kira, even though she may be a bit naive, because I really think she is in some ways, all of them kind of are. Not that they don't take the situation seriously, but sometimes I'm worried that they're a little too hopeful. And I think that Mrs. Yukimura, for all of her faults, is kind of realistic. But at the same time, I like the fact that Kira is saying, no, Mom, you're wrong. Like, we can do this. You just need to stand by us. And so she does face off with her mom. And then the Void Stiles ends up taking the power of the Oni. And now that all of Mrs. Yukimura's tales are gone, what does this mean exactly? I mean, obviously she's not dead. That's what we thought was going to happen. Do all the Oni have to die before she dies?
I've got a feeling it is that the Oni dying, but I didn't exactly follow the entire go process. Like, because they, you know, she tries to teach Kira to play Go earlier in the game, and Kira's kind of like, ah, this is a waste of time, and he's like, you know, she kind of makes it out to be this big thing, and then the dad finds their sort of abandoned game and was like, these pieces look like your mother's style, like aggressive, like, and you know, she was like, yeah, because she was like showing me the Nigitsune, and he was like, are you sure about that? And I didn't kind of understand that whole sinister thing. Like, was I missing something there? Was it like that her mother was tricking her about going to try and kill Styles again? Is that meant to be all it was? Because I didn't think she was ever not trying to kill Styles. I got a bit confused.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two sides to this. On the one side, I think that she was trying to distract Kira and to sort of have her sit here and study this game. But I also think it was almost not a clue on purpose, but I think in the context of the show, it was a clue to Kira that, okay, her mother's style is very aggressive. What would an aggressive person do in real life? She's going to go straight for the Nigitsune. And so I think that sort of made Kira realize what was going on and where her mom went. So although I was kind of hoping that game was going to kind of have like a bigger overall, not a plot point, but sort of like a reason and a little bit more of a significance, I think really those two things are what got Kira from point A to point B.
I also kind of, what really stood out to me was when they were arguing, when they ended up at, you know, Oak Creek, when they all tracked each other to where the Nigitsune was. Kira basically saying, maybe you don't want us to, you know, admit, maybe you don't want to admit there's a way to save Styles, or maybe you don't want us to save Styles, because if that's true, there might have been a way you could have saved Reese, but too late for that because he's all burnt up and dead, if you know what I mean. I might be paraphrasing a bit, but I don't know, that was kind of a bit of a jab. Do you think that that's true? Like, you know, because, you know, Noshiko is very much, this is my cross to bear, I did this, so I must end it, and Kira's kind of like, well, are you just, like, kind of taking this stance because if you had, you know, had this sort of opportunity in your time, you could have saved Reese, but you can't. So you're like, if Reese don't get to live, no one get to live, if you know what I mean.
I did kind of get that feeling just a little bit in terms of, like, but this is the thing is, they put such an emphasis on, if you don't learn from the past, you're doomed to repeat it. You know, that's exactly what Mrs. Yukimura is doing. She's not open to new experiences or learning or other potential ways of solving this. She's very, very narrow-minded in that, no, this is the only way to solve it, and this is how we're solving it, and that's it. There's nothing else. There is no other way to do this. There is only killing the Nigitsune. That is the only way to solve this. And it's kind of, it is very, very narrow-minded. And I mean, it's kind of that they're trying to pose all of these alternative solutions, which are very viable as well, because they're based on a lot of aspects of mythology and all of that stuff. And she just doesn't want to know. And it's kind of, they were trying to hammer home that message. If you don't learn from the past, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, you know, that's exactly where she was leading it. And I think, yeah, I almost get the feeling that a lot of the stuff that happened at Oak Creek has kind of been almost led that way because of her being so aggressive and because of her not wanting to listen to anyone else.
That's what I was trying to say earlier about the difference between Kira and her mom. Her mom is very realistic and strong, but I do think she's narrow-minded, like you said, and very proud. And that doesn't mean, you know, just because she has all of this experience doesn't mean that she's right. Kira, on the other hand, is very young. She's just starting to get into this world. And I think in a lot of ways, she's very naive. But her positivity and the hope that she has to save Styles, that doesn't mean that she's wrong either. And I hope that after this happens, and now that the Oni are on Void Styles' side, that maybe Kira and her mother can start working together now that Mrs. Yukimura doesn't have the Oni to back her up and have this sort of presence that she can just send out after Styles. And I think she's going to have to attack this problem in a different way, and hopefully she'll look at what Kira is doing and be willing to help her with her plans.
Yeah, I mean, the very last shot of them in the episode is sort of, they're sort of clinging together and stuff, so perhaps they will be a bit more on the same side now.
Given right, yeah.
Kira probably hasn't seen her mother. I mean, actually, they were playing Go, but, like, they're still very, like, oh, you're 900 years old.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that final shot of them and that whole final scene, we might as well get into it and get it over with, rip it off like a Band-Aid. But, yeah, so basically, Allison has died, and I think the first thing that I want to note that I'm not sure everybody is quite aware of is the reason why Allison was killed off. And that was something that was decided between Crystal Reed, the actress, and Jeff Davis. Crystal wanted to move on from the show. And as far as I know, there was no bad feelings or anything like that. She just wanted to do different things, be different characters. And in an interview, she said she gave as much as she could to Allison, and she felt like she couldn't take her any farther, and so something like this sort of felt like the right end for it. So I think that's important to note first and foremost.
I think the other thing from that interview that I took as well is that she was actually contracted further than season three, and they actually released her from her contract.
Mm-hmm.
Based on her wishes, is the other thing that I took from it as well.
Which Jeff did not have to do. I mean, that I don't know much about the industry. I don't know if that is super common or not, but you have a leading actress, literally the female lead in a television show, wants to lead, is still contracted to the show. They could have said no, and there was nothing that she could have done about it, but I think that's just a testament to how close the cast is and what everybody means to everyone else. And I think that the way that they went about solving this issue and sort of making everybody happy, except for us, of course, because I think we all cried horribly, was a really great thing. And I think that it's definitely important to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think the standard, it's probably different for networks and all sorts of things. I think the standard is like a first season, you have the 1 year contract because people don't know how the season's going to go. And then after that, I think the standard, unless edits are made to it, for a show is like a 7 year contract. Like, so the people, the leads are like, oh, okay, if we get 7 years worth of show, you're basically locked in for that whole time. And if they break the contract, it, you know, is a big deal. So for her to want to leave and be released from it means that she did want it quite, you know, quite a lot. And we don't tend to get into a lot of you know, personal issues of the cast, but her and Daniel Sharman used to be publicly dating and they're now not, presumably, and obviously she had that plot line with Isaac, and I don't think that's something that necessarily affects people too much in terms of, I think there have been plenty of shows where like people were together in the show or together in real life and then it goes weird. But you know, a lot of people did suspect that either her or Daniel would be the one leaving, just from rumors of what had been seen, or you know, who'd signed on for season four, or you know, who'd been seen on set and that kind of thing. And I guess if she's the one that wants to leave Teen Wolf now, she might have something on the horizon that we don't know about yet. You know, like, you know, she might just be, she, I know she mentioned in interview she's undertaking her first pilot season, like, so trying out for, you know, all the new starting shows, so she could be getting a show on another network or something like that. But it was very much her choice rather than just like, oh, we want to kill a character, sorry, bye, to someone, which I think is quite a big deal.
And I think in terms of what they could have done with her, with the character arc that she had up to this point, her dying, as per what we've had from 3A, 3B, is probably the only way she could have left, because she wouldn't have walked out of Beacon Hills.
Yeah, I mean,
and left her friends behind.
I kind of want to read out this piece of feedback. We've got a few, like, you know, we obviously want to talk a bit more about Allison's death and the situation surrounding it and what might happen, but, you know, all of the feedback that we've got here is about Allison's death, and I just want to sort of read out this one because I have some thoughts that sort of tie into it. and it's in regards to sort of Allison's death versus other deaths on the show. And this is from Beau Hawkins on Tumblr, who says, "Parts of the fandom are incredibly hard on Jeff Davis in ways that I find incredibly unfair. One frequent criticism, though, is somewhat valid. Far more female characters are killed off than male ones. I wrote a post about this and basically concluded that none of the female deaths feel egregious. I think the actual problem is several male characters have lived who maybe shouldn't have. Natalie brought up this issue on Twitter, and if it comes up, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the podcast." Well, yeah. Here's the situation. I mean, it's Allison dying as opposed to leaving in some other way is causing a relative amount of drama in terms of her being, you know, a female protagonist dying where we've had, you know, quite a few females die and not very many male characters die. We've had Matt and Boyd die, but every other really bad guy, like, who's been a guy, hasn't died. Like, Jackson, I mean, I didn't really want Jackson to die, but, like, Gerard, Peter, Jacalian, you know, Ennis died, so that's another guy. But, like, versus every female villain that's had has died, as well as a couple of female protagonists. And I've seen, like, every chart about this. I've seen the percentages. I know that it is a big divide. And, yes, I actually agree with this post in terms of I haven't ever felt like, oh, that person shouldn't have died, especially with, like, people like Gage who wanted to leave the show, Gage Golightly, who played Erica. So I don't feel like the female deaths are egregious. I do agree with this in that there's probably male characters who should have died and not been, like, left as possibilities to come back. Like, and I mean, yes, maybe they wanted to do something with those characters, but if that's the case, they maybe should have had some female ones left to do something with it as well. Like, I think Carly could have probably had a pretty interesting ongoing arc if she'd not died. I think Jennifer should have died. I really loved Haley and I really loved that arc, but I think that that wouldn't have ever been a redeemable story or even like a future antagonist kind of story. Carly and Erica and, I mean, I think the thing is with people dying, and I mean, and this is kind of a big thing with Allison as well, if someone is leaving the show and they don't want to kill the character, they have to and this is kind of really, you know, people might not particularly like me saying this. If a person leaves the show and they are not dying, they have to dedicate a lot of time to constructing a plot in which they just, you know, which would lead them to choosing to go elsewhere, if you know what I mean. Like, Cora and Jackson both left. And yes, they were done quite swiftly, but I think everyone was a bit confused by Cora. Like, they kind of just shoved that in there because they found out that Adelaide was leaving. It wasn't a planned thing. Allison, Crystal had planned to leave for quite a long time, like nearly a year or whatever. And if they had sort of had her plot, you know, if they decided to make her plot, you know, her leaving, for, you know, it would have involved Chris probably having to leave too, and they probably didn't want JR to leave if he didn't want to leave. They probably would have had to have, you know, a reason for her to leave Beacon Hills again, which wouldn't have made that much sense given that she, you know, the character of Allison fought so hard to come back to Beacon Hills with her dad and make a life there in the way that she wanted to. It would have been, like, what could have possibly, like, driven her out again if, like, her mother's suicide and all of this, like, whole world turning upside down didn't. She wanted to come back there and be in the pack. And she did that, you know, and so to make a plot line that would have been believable that she just left to go somewhere would have sort of not made any sense with the overarching plot of the show or the development of the character. So I feel like the only way that she would have left there is by out of her control, if you know what I mean, the character, that is. So I think that it does fit that Allison died. I don't think the problem here is that Allison herself died. I think that people are making it part of a bigger, possibly existing problem, which is a shame because, yes, the figures are there in terms of that problem existing, but it means it's taking away from this particular incident as a valid plot point, which I think it is a valid plot point, whereas ones in the past may not have been, if that makes sense.
No, that definitely makes sense to me. I mean, in terms of what we've got from Allison, as she's come so far from, like, season two, and it was kind of amazing, like, the way she'd come and she'd started to redeem herself from season two, from after everything that happened there, to where she was in 3B. you know, she would do anything for her friends. She changed the code of her family, and she went down fighting because that's the only way she would have gone down.
Yeah, I think that her dying in the line of fire is far more believable for her character. Like, incidentally dying in the line of fire is far more believable than having to construct this plot that actually really backpedals the character for her to have some reason to leave them. Like, I actually think that it does make a lot of sense. And I understand that people are lumping it into this problem, which is a shame, because it's a shame the problem exists, because it's taking away from the validity of this point, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah. I completely agree. And I think we're probably in the minority, and maybe this will change as time goes on and people sort of accept this sort of thing. But although it made me really sad to see Allison go, because obviously she's such a huge character and she's come such a long way since that pilot episode we saw so many years ago, I think that her dying like this was so heroic and really kind of beautiful. And that ending scene was really amazing. Just sort of, it was a Scott and Allison moment, and I really, really loved it. And I think that from a writer's standpoint, this is a really bold choice for the show. And I mean, obviously they didn't really have a whole lot of choice having to do this because Crystal did want to leave. But when you kill off your main female lead character, that's going to shake some things up. Yeah. And it makes me really excited actually for season 4, because we're going to see a lot of character development, particularly I think from Lydia and her trying to discover her powers, because I think she's going to feel really guilty and she's really going to sort of throw herself into, okay, what is a banshee? What does she do? How do I control my powers? I can't let this happen again. I have to protect my friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of Scott and Kira and even Isaac too, I mean, they obviously had a very important thing. It's going to be really cool, I think, to see where they go from here and how they interact with each other.
I mean, on one hand as well, I was thinking, like, a show, you know, a show based in horror and based in supernatural drama and violence like Teen Wolf is, it's actually also, I mean, this sounds a bit cold-hearted, but it's also really rare, it's going to be really rare for a show to ever get the chance to kill off one of their lead characters. Like, that sounds really bad, but, like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because those contracts do exist and, like, people don't necessarily want to leave, like, their jobs and stuff like that. So, like, for someone to be like, you're going to die now, and they're like, oh, I don't want to leave the show, like, you know, kind of thing, like, which I haven't heard too much of, at least with Teen Wolf. I've heard of it on other shows. People, like, I didn't want to leave the show. They basically decided that they wanted to kill my character or whatever. You know, so for minor characters, that can kind of be expected, but there's very, very few opportunities for a show to kill off one of its lead characters and be able to actually have that huge drama of a storyline. That's actually, like, a really big opportunity for them. And I feel really bad saying that, but it's true. So that's, like, so if someone comes to you and is like, look, I want to leave, I'm really sorry about this, they're like, well, cool, I suppose. Like, I think it kind of reminds me of the end of season 2 of the Doctor Who reboot, when Billie Piper decided she wanted to leave as Rose, which she did come back for some of season 4. But, you know, I've read her autobiography, and sort of what she said about that almost sounds exactly like what Crystal said in this interview, of being like, you know, she feels like she's given all she can to her, and it was very upsetting, and then she had doubts about it, and that the creator was like, well, we're gonna give her, like, the best ending, like, that no one will ever forget, and that kind of thing. And that, oh god, that's the end of season 2 of Doctor Who, with them, like, trapped on both sides of the wall in the different universes, is just horrible.
Stop.
God, it's bad. So, yeah, but that kind of, and, like, she said that, kind of, Crystal said that Jeff said, like, nearly kind of the same thing to her, and that, you know, it's really, like, it is, like, a really good opportunity if someone does want to leave. Like, it might as well be something worthwhile. And I think that this did sort of fit for Allison. In terms of, like, character development, I do think there's going to be a fair amount from Lydia, because one thing that kind of surprised me in this episode was when she showed up. I mean, Meredith said to her, you know, said to the guys, oh, she said she doesn't want to be found. And then she was like, why did you come here? Didn't you get my message? But earlier, Lydia was saying, it was kind of slurred, and I kept trying to rewind it and catch it. She was like, they'll find me. They're going to find me. Was she saying that about the Oni, or was she saying that in, like, a negative way? Like, oh, I don't want them to find me? Because you didn't actually hear her say they're going to find me. Or was she trying to, like, dupe the Nagitsune? Like, I don't really understand
what happened. I kind of read that more like she was trying to dupe him, to kind of...
Yeah.
She was taunting him, almost.
Mm.
And that's how I read that, with Lydia and the Nogitsune. I don't know that I would have believed... I would have hoped, as Lydia, that they wouldn't have come, that they'd have heeded the warning. But I don't think deep down I would have believed that they wouldn't come for me.
Yeah, because she wrote it on the car, and then we don't know if she knows she was talking to Meredith, or if Meredith was just sort of tuning into her thoughts or whatever. But that whole thing kind of confused me. But yeah, I feel like that Lydia is going to be somewhat wrecked by this. Given that, I mean, her and Allison have had an interesting friendship. I mean, one of the entries we had for our contest of guest listeners talks about Allison and Lydia, and how Allison is almost, when Lydia befriended Allison, it was almost like Allison was kind of going through the motions of being like a girly friend, if you know what I mean. And I totally agree with that. Not that I don't think she didn't care, but it was like she didn't really know how to do that, but she kind of developed this friendship. Like, Lydia just adopted her, and because of what all they ended up going through together, they developed this thing that was so, you know, so close. And despite the fact that they are very different types of women. And yeah, it's I think Lydia's going to be somewhat, you know, messed up by this, which is...
I mean, more than anything, what Allison died for in this episode was to save Lydia's life. I mean, that's why they were there.
Yeah.
That's what they were for. It was to save her best friend, the one person that she probably trusted and loved above everyone else, because of all of the people involved in Allison's life, Lydia is probably the only one who's been that constant since she came to Beacon Hills. I mean, from season 1 to 3B, Lydia has been almost her rock, because she's been there through everything, and they haven't really ever been at odds. You know, they've been there for each other, they've respected each other, they've both wanted to protect each other, you know, they confide in each other, and they trusted and loved each other. And I don't even mean this in a romantic sense, I mean this in a there was a love, there was a very, very deep friendship there, and she was there for Lydia. This is the thing, she died for that. She died for her code, and it's her code. And I think that's what people need to remember, is that we protect those who cannot protect themselves, was something that Allison came up with, and that's what she died upholding, you know. And I think for deaths that could have been fitting, that was probably the most fitting thing that we could have had for her. You know, she stood for that, she believed in it, and she fought for her code, for her friends, for Lydia, right up until her last breath. And I thought that, for me, that was, I don't think there could have been anything more beautiful in terms of Allison's character arc. Like, for me, that's what brought me to tears, is that, you know, she died fighting to protect something that she stood so strongly for. So, yeah, making myself upset.
And then her actual death, obviously, Scott was there for, which was interesting in that, you know, it's kind of a, you know, he was the one to sort of go to her, and what she said to him is interesting as well, because I think it was relatively scripted, but something that Crystal also said in this interview she gave about leaving is that final scene, she was like, I don't know how they're going to end up doing it, because I haven't seen this, you know, probably would have been given, well before the episode aired. But she was like, I don't know, I haven't seen the final cut, and that things always end up looking different, or they use different takes to what you're expecting. But in that final scene when she was dying, you know, she was talking to Scott, and she had those lines about, you know, you were my first love and stuff, but that, you know, she was then saying to him, like, I love you, present tense, etc. And apparently one of the producers or something, I don't know if it was Jeff or if it was someone else, was like, no, don't say that. Like, she doesn't love him now. Like, she loves Isaac now. And Crystal was like, no, she doesn't. Like, if you know what I mean. Like, and it's just one of those interesting circumstances where sometimes you sort of think about how much an actor is attached to their character or how much they think or believe about their character or how much they just trust in what the writers write, and that they, if they take the writer's word as powers that be, as word of God, or if they have their own opinions about the character that they believe more strongly from playing them. And that does seem to be a thing that's happened in this circumstance, in that Crystal believes that, like, you know, no matter how she feels about Isaac or whatever, that she never moved on from Scott, and that Scott was always, you know, so important to her. It wasn't just a throwaway, oh yeah, we've all moved on now, it's all fine circumstance. Like, they probably always believed they were going to come back together in some way. And and I know some people have thought that about Allison as a character. It's interesting that, you know, that's something Crystal thought, and that she sort of took control of that scene.
That's something that I was adamant about from the beginning, and I think that was one of the things, one of the reasons why I wasn't upset when they broke up in season two at the end of it, because she says, you know, there's no such thing as fate, and Scott says there's no such thing as werewolves, and I was like, yes, these guys are endgame. It's okay if they break up and, you know, other things happen in between. I truly felt that they were going to be together in the end, and although I think, you know, that's disappointing that they're not going to be at the same time, I feel like it's okay. And I know that some people think that they kind of threw in Kira as, okay, well, we have to replace our main female character now, and she's got to be this new love interest and everything. But I think Kira is someone in and of herself, and she's very different from Allison, although they do have a lot of the same strengths. She has her own personality, and she doesn't feel like a replacement. And I think it's going to be really interesting going forward to see how Kira deals with the fact that Allison's dead, but also seeing her deal with the fact that Scott is obviously going to be mourning somebody that he loves still very, very much. And so I'm interested to see where their relationship is going to go from here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that there won't be too much romance on the terms of Scott or Isaac. Mm-hmm. I feel like next season might be a bit Styles romancy if it ends up being all okay. I feel like he hasn't had anyone that he, you know, was in love with die recently, so he might have the chance to get some romance. But again, if it's with Lydia, she also might be like, I'm depressed, don't come near me, yeah, kind of thing. So
yeah, I mean, I saw I can't remember what article it was. It was an article on a website that said a little bit of, you know, for next season, you know, would this whole thing with Lydia and her feelings over Allison throw her more into Styles' path? Mm. And I don't know that it will, because, I mean, I know that obviously the characters are differentiating a little bit as well between Styles and the Nogitsune, but I don't know how easy it would be to kind of disassociate herself from how Void Styles treated her in this episode as well.
I feel like no one is going to be in the position for romance next season, honestly, and that's fine. But like, hey, maybe they'll have time for the Sheriff and Melissa. Maybe that's how they're going to make time for the Sheriff and Melissa romance, by having all the kids be traumatized.
I think season four, it would be incredibly interesting to see romance go completely on the back burner and there not be any developments in terms of like them hooking up and getting together and doing that. I would love to see the impact. Yeah, I'd really like to see the impact of this in terms of how it affects the friendships, how it affects the kind of the familial relationships between like Styles and his father and Scott and his mother, and I'd really, really also love to see scenes of support between the Sheriff, Melissa, and Chris.
Yeah.
I really, really want to see like a realistic depiction of like, I mean, Allison was a huge part of this show. She was massive, and it's going to have long-lasting impact on every single character. I was just thinking, like, even on someone like Coach. I mean, Coach's last memory of Allison is going to be he was failing her in his class. It's kind of, I have so many feelings about this. It's just, it's going to have massive impact throughout the entire show, from main characters to side characters, teachers, you know, everything, because she was so ingrained into life in Beacon Hills in such a short time.
How do they explain these deaths at, like, the school or whatever? Like, it, like, so many people, like, violent. Yeah, even if they're not like, oh, she was murdered, like, so it's not like, oh, she had cancer, or oh, she was in a car accident. Like, so many people at the school have, like, died violently. Like, how do they explain this? I don't understand. And are they going to, like, have a time jump in season 4? Is it going to be, like, or is it going to be, like, a funeral? Or, like, how, you know, do you think it's going to be, like, it's been 4 months and we're not over it, but we're, like, dealing with it, as opposed to, like, immediately dealing with it?
Oh, I'm not sure if I would prefer it being a time jump, or if I'd prefer to have the closure and see a funeral or a memorial or something along those lines. I'm not entirely sure which of those options I'd prefer. I mean, I guess if they did do a bit of a time jump and we didn't see a memorial or we didn't see something like that, then I would absolutely need to see it explored very, very carefully exactly how this is affecting everyone. I mean, without that kind of initial closure, they would probably have to spend a lot more time focusing on the effects of Allison's death. Mm. But I don't know which way I'd prefer it to go.
Karen?
I don't know. I mean, it's so hard because she was such a huge character. And I mean, to tell you the truth, like, I'm most interested in the reactions of two people, and that's obviously Lydia for so many reasons, but also Chris. Like, Chris has lost everybody, and
he's still got Derek. It's okay,
he does. And I mean, I really think that they might even get closer because of this, but Chris has lost so much, and he chose this way of life, and he chose to have a family and to bring that family up with this way of life, and the guilt that he must be feeling and everything, I can't even imagine it. And I don't, like, this is going to sound really harsh, but I don't know how he's going to go on. Like, I'm actually really worried about his mental stability. I don't know if he's going to go off the deep end like Allison did, or if he's just going to completely shut down, or if he's going to become a better person in her honor. I think that it could go any one of those ways, and I really hope that it's the last one and that he does team up with Derek more and really tries to get to the bottom of, you know, the hunters and what was going on with who was shooting at Ethan and Aiden, because I have a feeling that'll lead into season 4. But, you know, the whole thing is just so tragic and intense, and I think it's really going to have lasting influences for quite a while, as it should, because she was such a huge character.
Does anyone want to look at any of the other feedback that we have here?
The first one, I think, I actually had a very, very small discussion about this with Jen, who's been a host on here, guest host on the show.
Yeah.
You've probably listened if you've listened before, guys. But I had a very, very mild discussion with her, like, early hours of this morning about this one, which is basically, was the possibility of biting Allison to save her, to make her a werewolf, mentioned at all? I mean, it was never mentioned in the scope of the show, but I was talking with Jen this morning because I think she said something along the lines of, why didn't Scott give her the bite? And my response to that was, well, the two instances of, or I guess the three instances of someone taking the bite have been like, it's taken a long time for it to take. So with Scott, it at least took overnight for it to take and to actually start changing his physiology, like to start healing himself. And with Victoria Argent, the same thing. It took what looked like about 24 hours for it to start actually changing her genetic makeup to start her healing herself. And then with Paige, it took hours for her to start like rejecting it properly, the bite. So I think it's entirely possible that Scott could have bit Allison, but I don't think it would have done anything at all.
I just had a really, like, you just mentioned Paige and I'd kind of forgotten it. My God, I can't believe Derek Hale went around biting more teenagers after that went so well for him, by the way. I just remember that. I was just like, God, like, if you knew that was such a risk, why are you doing it? But oh well, he wanted to make himself friends. Go on.
Yeah, I think that's probably why they didn't go in that direction with Allison and Scott in that scene, because I think she was too far gone by the time Scott was there, and I think they knew that, and I think it wouldn't have done anything. And I think it probably, if Scott had bitten her and she'd still have died, I think that would have, I hesitate to say cheapened the scene, but it wouldn't, I don't think it would have had the same impact, because it would have kind of transferred the guilt to Scott, and I don't think that's something that scene needed, because Scott's storyline doesn't need to be fueled by guilt for Allison's death. It's not needed, it's not required. So I think the bite in this instance just wouldn't have fit in at all.
I
think it would have been the wrong choice.
I also kind of think that, like, he probably wasn't even thinking about himself in terms of being a werewolf at that point, if you know what I mean? Like, that he was just a broken boy, like, and he hasn't been an alpha that long. Like, there's no way that would have been, he's not a born werewolf. If it was Derek in that position, he might have had that thought, but there's no way that it would have necessarily been Scott's automatic go-to, if you know what I mean?
Plus, besides that, I mean, Scott was very adamant that Styles had never asked for the bite before, and he was hesitant to give it to him. And Allison, considering her past, not only with her mom, but the fact that she's a hunter, like, I don't think Allison would go to the extreme that her mom did and kill herself, because she was, I mean, obviously she was dying, but you know what I mean? If she was to turn into a werewolf, I think that she would have lived with it, because she was much closer to the werewolves than her mother had ever been, and she kind of understood that it wasn't the end of the line, and that it was okay to be a werewolf, and there were good ones. But Scott, I can't imagine him being so selfish as to just do it without asking for permission or without having talked to someone beforehand. Mm-hmm. So for me, it does make a lot of sense that he really just wanted to comfort her as she was dying and to be there for her.
I had like a very, very vague kind of things that I would love to think about happening either in season 4 based on some mythology. And another thing that could link back to the Raven comment that you made, that I was thinking about earlier today. And when I actually read up and then you sent out the notes for today and had the Raven comment in it, made me go, oh, that's quite interesting. There could still be, I don't want to give anyone false hope, but there could still be like potentials to bring Allison back into the show without actually bringing her back
to life,
so to speak. Yeah, so not bringing her back as Peter was brought back. But there are other ways that they could bring her into the fold, into the show, in other ways. And one of those ways I thought would tie in really, really closely with Lydia's storyline for season 4, because I think it was Holland said that season 4 is Lydia's season. And I think, you know, Allison's death probably ties really closely into that, in that, is there a possibility that she could start hearing Allison's voice? Because we know that she hears dead people, but, you know, is there a possibility she could start hearing Allison? Is there a possibility they could start communicating? that sort of stuff.
That's something that I had been thinking about too, that, I mean, we don't know the extent to the of the Banshee powers, but it's obviously connected to death. And I think if, I mean, we've seen that Crystal possibly could be on for season 4, and even if she really is dead, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, if that is, if what we saw is true. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that would be kind of cool. I mean, they brought Victoria back and stuff for, you know, little cameos. And I think if it's going to work with anybody, it would definitely work with Lydia.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about was, it was kind of one of those things where I was like, oh, this is just a ridiculous headcanon kind of what I would want for Allison in death. And then I kind of started thinking, oh, hold on, there's actually some mythology based on this, like Celtic mythology as well. But the Valkyries, I was thinking, you know, in death, I would, because they brought up Loki and all of that before, and Baldur and all of that in 3A with the mistletoe and all of that. And I started thinking, oh, wouldn't it be cool if Allison became a Valkyrie? But then there's also the Celtic warrior goddess, Morrigan, who's very, very similar in terms of the Valkyrie, where they're kind of, they honor the souls of the dead and they choose whether someone dies in battle or not. But the thing of note is that the Morrigan from Celtic mythology may assume the form of a raven.
Yeah, I think I've heard that before, actually.
Yeah, so that when you wrote that in the notes for today's podcast episode, I was like, oh, actually that it's one of those things where it's like, oh, this is a silly little headcanon thing that I would love to think of, you know, after death, she'd become a warrior in death as well.
I mean,
or at least something relating to it. But yeah,
I mean, presumably Crystal is still trying to leave, so she's not going to have that much time to come back and do cameos or voiceovers or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, perhaps it's part of her contract, like, you know, contract release or something.
It was just thinking of things that, you know, could give her the potential to come back if she wanted to.
Yeah.
Or at least would give her the option to drop in and have, like, cameos.
Yeah.
In episodes, rather than becoming, like, a recurring character or a main character again.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things that I was curious about this entire death thing, I mean, and it may have just been a total red herring, is that there were some shooting sheets released for next season. Like, they were like, and again, it may have been a total purposeful misleading leak, but there were definitely like call sheets of like scenes being shot for episode 401 and 404 that had Allison, like had Crystal, there were scenes between Lydia and Allison and Crystal was on them. And I don't really understand whether, and, you know, no one saw her shooting. These are just call sheets. But that could either, you know, I'm just wondering about that, whether it could be, like, a, you know, her doing, you know, something that Lydia is hearing, or whether it's a complete red herring that was, like, leaked to make people not be able to guess who was dying. Like, you know, like, what do you think about that at this point?
I think it's a possibility that it's a red herring, but I also think it's a possibility that she could be showing up and maybe doing some things with Lydia, or there could be a flashback or like a remembrance type of thing at the beginning. I don't know, but I don't necessarily think that this is the end of Crystal, even if it is necessarily the end of Allison.
I guess that is sort of all we can really say at this point about Allison. We don't really know where it's going to go from here, or whether she's going to be in the episode next week or anything like that. Did anyone have any kind of suspicion during the episode that it was going to be her, or that it was going to be someone else? Like, did you kind of have any like foreshadowing or anything like that?
I would have bet money it was going to be Isaac.
Really? Just from him getting sliced up? Or did you mean before that?
Both. I kind of had a feeling for a while that maybe it would be Isaac, because he felt like enough of a core member that it would make an impact, but also like enough on the outskirts that it wouldn't be one of the main ones. And I mean, from the beginning, we've been kind of wondering if it was Allison, and that's sort of always been in the back of my mind. But I figured if she was going to die, it was going to be in the finale episode. And I wasn't sure like how many deaths, how many major deaths we were going to have. But when they started slicing up Isaac, I was like, yeah, this is going to happen. Crap. And then everything was happy. And then everything was really, really sad. So it definitely, I don't want to say it was a shocking death, but the way that it happened was really surprising. I mean, it was just bam, all of a sudden she's run through with the sword and it's kind of happening. And that's the part that I wasn't really prepared for.
Dunya?
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I really didn't want it to be Allison and Crystal. But as you are both aware, I said prior to 3B that I pretty much convinced myself at that point that it was going to be her. Mm. And I'd said it, yeah, prior to 3B, but I mean,
not to gossip, but I think anyone who follows Teen Wolf on a production level and is kind of aware of what goes on in the fandom is relatively aware that Crystal had reasons for wanting to leave or was not the closest person in the cast to the rest of the other people in the cast, which is doesn't necessarily mean anything for a job, you know, and she definitely is close to some people in the cast, but, you know, she does, you know, a lot of the others are very, very close, and there's some that I could not imagine leaving, whereas I could imagine her opting out, like, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So as much as I thought it was going to be her, I still don't think I was emotionally prepared to actually see it play out on the screen. Mm. I thought I would be with everything that we had, all of the build up to this, all of the kind of the Twitter coverage from MTV and everything, and I thought I would be more ready to say goodbye at this point, but I think it just made it worse. I think it hit me harder because I'd worked myself up so much by this point that seeing it play out on the screen just kind of hit me really hard, and especially because I love Allison so much.
All these, all this stuff I kept throughout the episode, I kept being like, oh my god, like about all different people. Again, in the back of my head, I was still thinking Allison but then I was thinking maybe I duped myself into thinking that. Like, there are a few things. I think there was the scene with Allison and Isaac in the car had some music that made me think, oh yeah, it's going to be one of these two people. And then the scene with Chris and her saying, you know, what she needed to say and making the arrow, oh, she's going to graduate and then she's going to die. And then I'm like, but no, maybe that's too heavy-handed. And maybe you're meant to think that it's her and then they're going to spring someone else on you. And then when Meredith was sitting in the classroom with Danny and Coach, I was like, oh my god, it's going to be Danny or Coach because she's there to signal their deaths. And especially when Coach was being so epic, I got really worried because
if they kill off Danny, so help me.
He was and then I was kind of getting a bit worried that it might be like surprise Derek, like that you thought that it was going to be someone at the big battle at Oak Creek, but that it was actually Derek getting like shot through his window in his loft by whoever this freak is that's shooting at people. And then, yeah, and then Isaac was getting sliced up and I'm like, oh, well, if it's going to be one of Allison or Isaac, maybe it's going to be Isaac. Because again, I'd seen the call sheets for those things involving Crystal, and I think Daniel has not been seen on set. I mean, not that we see everything on set, but, you know, Daniel hasn't been reported by any fans as being seen on set for season 4. Though I'm sure he is returning at this point. So I kept going back and forth. I mean, in the back of my mind, I always assumed it was going to be Allison, but then I kept getting tricked throughout the episode, basically.
Yeah.
I will not lie to you guys. I'm really sorry. The whole time I had my fingers crossed going, I was just being like, please not Derek, please. Literally had my fingers crossed being, please not Derek. So, yeah. I was kind of willing to take anyone else.
Aww. Derek has such a hard life already. He doesn't need to die.
He already had Derek's dead storyline earlier in season 3, like, but then he wasn't really dead, so.
And he kind of had it in season 1 as well.
Yeah, he did too.
Oh, Derek, you've died twice already. You've had enough death.
God.
Instead of the boy who cried wolf, the boy who cried dead.
Oh, no. No! We should probably get out of here, I suppose, so that we can get this up for everyone in time. But, yeah, so, Karen, did you have a non sequitur for us, or did you have anything else to say about Derek's death or anything like that, like Derek's multiple deaths or anyone else?
I'm not talking about Derek's death. That's off the table for me. But yeah, I do have a non sequitur, and it's happy and cheerful, of course. No, it's not. My question is, what's the worst injury you've ever had?
I don't know. What about you, Donya?
There was the accident I had the other day is probably the worst thing I've done. And yeah, I can't go into too many details, obviously, but basically, I ended up with shards of glass stuck in my hand because someone neglected to mention that there was smashed glass on something, and I basically ended up having to pick shards of glass out of my hand. Obviously, absolutely fine. It's healing quite well. I'm okay. but it's still kind of a little bit painful. It's really weird. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, don't withhold information, guys. If you've broken something, don't withhold information.
Can you give it to someone else to look at?
Yeah, please, please tell them. Don't withhold something like that, because someone could end up seriously hurt. I didn't end up as badly hurt as I probably could have. But in terms of, like, injuries, funny thing, never broken a bone, never ended up in hospital for anything, never needed stitches, never needed anything. So I've been pretty lucky, all things considered. Yeah, I tend to have more silly accidents than anything else. So, like, cuts that aren't too bad, usually. I'm a little bit clumsy at times. Mm. I trip a lot. I end up with bruises more than anything else. But, yeah, I've never really hurt myself badly.
I haven't broken a bone either. I have been to hospital because I have an autoimmune problem. So I've been in hospital for things. It's not really an injury. But I probably, when I was in high school, or even younger than that as well, I've done stuff to my ankles a few times. I've had, like, either a fall off something or a fallen down. I once fell down the stairs at train station really badly, and I've damaged my ankle, like, for, like, you know, I don't know, tendons, whatever, like, really bad ankle sprains. And I actually did that last year, literally just by putting my foot down wrong on something that just felt weird. And that has had an ongoing effect of, like, every day when I wake up now, still it, like, kind of hurts to put my foot on the floor. So that's something I'm going to have to get looked at. But, yeah, the worst was probably I literally, like, fell down the stairs at a train station. I don't even know how I did it. Just put my foot down wrong and really damaged my ankle for a long time. That would have been in my last year of high school. And then a few years ago when I was living at the house I lived at before now, the landlord had, like, a big pile of, like, pipes and, like, junk, like, kind of from renovating something else in we had a massive yard, and anyway, it had this big pile of stuff against the shed, and I was getting something, and I kind of put my head up, and I basically knocked a massive gash. It wasn't even massive, but it bled so much because it was my forehead, right on my hairline, like, center of my head, hairline on my forehead. And yeah, basically it was just like, had blood all over my face and in my mouth, and someone had to come and clean me up. It wasn't a big deal, and the head wounds heal fast, but they also bleed a lot. So I was like covered in blood and kind of freaked out. So that was fun. How about you, Karen?
Well, my story's pretty good. I am a total klutz too, although most of the time my injuries aren't very serious. I've never broken a bone, which will probably surprise some people, but I have had stitches. When I was 10 years old, I was climbing a tree and it was dead, so that wasn't the smartest thing to do. And I was a good maybe like 5, 6, 7 feet off of the ground, like from the bottom of my feet down. That's how much space was in between. And the branch that I was standing on was just like a little nub of a branch, and it broke, and I fell straight to the ground. Oh my and that God. Piece of branch sliced open my leg right near the knee.
My heart is like going like,
Well, obviously I'm okay.
I know. I don't like heights, and I couldn't have lived through that. I would have just lied down on the floor and died.
Well, it's funny because, well, I was only 10 years old, and I ran screaming across the yard, and my dad, like, once I got on the porch, he, like, laid me down, and he had to call the ambulance and everything. Totally forgot my birthday, which I'm never letting him forget that.
Was it your birthday that it happened on?
No, no, but he, like, they asked him how old I was, and he was like, when were you born? Oh God, what year? And I was like, Dad. And, but he, like, checked the yard, and he was like, there's not a single drop of blood out there. I ran so fast across the yard that, like, all my blood stayed within me. But what I was really excited about, believe it or not, was that I was 10 years old and I was in room 10, and they thought they were going to have to give me 10 stitches, and they ended up giving me 11 stitches. I was so disappointed. And I wanted to watch them stitch me up, and they were me. So, and then actually what's even more interesting. Yes. Yeah. I'm a little weird, but they stitched me up so tightly, and they said I wasn't going to have a scar. And now I have this massive scar on my leg because they stitched me up so tight, it actually pulled all of the skin. And so when my aunt, who was a nurse, was taking the stitches out so I wouldn't have to go back and, like, be charged money to have the stitches removed, I was screaming bloody murder because they were in there so tight and they were all, like, crusted up and stuff. It was a pretty horrible experience, but
that's yeah. Cool. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with everyone. I do not feel good about that story, Karen.
I don't really climb trees anymore.
Oh, good, good. That's good to know that we won't have a repeat of that then. Cool. Okay. So I guess that we should go now. Next week is the season finale of season 3 for Teen Wolf, the Divine Move. So any predictions as to what the Divine Move is going to be?
No, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I just need it right now because I'm really stressing out over what's real, what's not real, and what's going to happen. And
yeah. And if you guys get to watch the episode, not you guys specifically, I mean the listeners get to watch the episode before I get to watch it in Australia. I mean, not that I wait long, but like a few hours. Please don't tweet spoilers in my direction. Not that anyone did this week, but a couple of people came very close to it, being like, oh, I never want to watch Teen Wolf again, I'm so sad, or whatever. Not even at the podcast account, directly at my Twitter account, because I managed to watch this episode unspoiled by basically putting my phone in my bag while I had to go out and then not looking at it at all until I got home, which is very stressful for me because I'm very attached to my phone. so I was really unspoiled, which was good, and I'd like to do that for this week as well. Yeah, but we shall see, I suppose. Anyway, I guess we'll leave you all now, and thank you to Donya for coming on at her late night time in Wales.
Yeah, I'm used to it at this point. It's all good.
And I guess we'll see you guys soon. It's quite soon till basically this. It's the 19th of March now, and on the 19th of April we'll be bike conning, so that'll be fun.
Yay. So close.
Yeah, I'll see you guys soon, I guess. And that will be fun for everyone. We're having fun at the moment. Like, Donya and I have had to, like, use a go-between to check that we're not getting the same presents for each other. It's really bad. I'm like, yeah, you tell her and I'll tell her and she'll tell us if we've fucked up. If we've if we've gotten the same thing or something. And it's ridiculous.
We're good, though.
But I think it's fine. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see you guys, whoever's coming to BikeCon then, and we'll speak to you guys next week, I suppose. So, yeah, we'll say bye for now, and final farewell to Allison Argent. So, yeah, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
And you'll be lucky once waiting for the center when the summer comes drags you for miles so you cover up as the weather starts to change and you settle in the business it remains.
I had to try so hard not to actually cry every time we were talking about Alice.
Oh, really? I did cry in the episode, but yeah.
Oh, I cried so hard. And that was really bad. I was like, it's because I didn't want to wake up the guy who's in the room next to me.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I was sobbing, like actually sobbing. I was just, oh, yeah.